AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Timo Albus Daly, and today I am joined once again by my ever-capable co-host, Mr. Jesse Billington. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. I spent the weekend in the company of a midget that I call the Yellow Peril. How are you?
Great. We're also joined by friend of the podcast and Inside F2 host, Mr. Fraser Ford. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Yeah, Formula 3 is soon to be returning, and I'm very much looking forward to talking about it today.
Yes, exactly. That is the reason that I have gathered you both here today, and we finally have all of the drivers that will be in Formula 3 this year. They took their sweet, sweet time in announcing all of them, but we got there. I mean, granted, it's 30 drivers on the grid, so they were going to take a little bit longer, but they took the mickey a little bit. But we shall launch straight in, I think, with a team that, up until a recent driver announcement, I definitely wasn't going to put up at the top of this podcast, but it's the one I'm now most excited for, and I feel like I put up a graphic on Instagram where I feel like I treated them too harshly for their F2 choices now that I've seen one of their choices for F3. So that's PHM Racing, one of the new teams on the grid for this year, taking over from...
It was Shrews in F2, so it's probably Shrews in F3, wasn't it? Yeah.
I shouldn't have doubted myself for a second there. Anyway, we've got three drivers, first of which is the most exciting one, I think, because it is Sophia Fleur. She is first time back in Formula 3 since 2020 when she raced for Campos. She's since gone and raced in DTM and the ELMS series where she got two podiums. She's going to be joined by Piotr Wisnicki, who is someone who made a single-seater debut back in 2020 as well, competed for two seasons in Italian F4 with the best result of 19th in the standings there before stepping up to drive in Formula Regional European Championship last year. And the third driver will be Roberto Faria, who kind of made a half-season return to British F4 in 2020. And then he scored two podiums in the opening two rounds the next time along there and kind of stuck with GB3 then in 2021 and 2022. Summer was only 19 years older after all of that and was fifth in the standings and got one win and a further 14 podiums, which is just a mad kind of counter statistic there. There's a lot to unpack there, but Fraser, that's why I'm going to come to you because you don't get to talk about F3 enough. So here we go. PHM,
I'm going to absolutely love my opportunity to talk about Formula 3. Yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, Sophia Flores for me is the most exciting there. It's I'm really excited to see her back, as you say, a couple of seasons out, first season since 2020. It was a really difficult season in 2020. It was with Campos, who didn't necessarily have the most competitive car. So I think it's, a nice opportunity for her to come back. I think her highest finishing position back then, she didn't score a point, unfortunately, but got a P12, which I think was in the Monza, in the sprint race in Monza, which shows that she has potential. You know, that's a driver's circuit. It's not an easy place to do well, and she did well there. So yeah, as you say, she's gone off. She's raced in DTM, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to her coming back this year. And hopefully the PHM car is a competitive car. Hopefully they can provide her something that, you know, can compete for points every now and again. And I think it's really good for females in motorsport to have someone back in Formula 3, especially with Tatiana Calderon not getting a seat in Formula 2. I think it's really important for young girls to have a female role model that they can look up to. And Sophia Flores, welcome back.
And Jesse, having gone and done DTM and ELMS, she's got unique experience that none of the other drivers on the grid really have because they're all still fairly fresh-faced, and not that Sophia isn't, but she's just been around a year or two more and has obviously had the chance to go off and keep the motorsport dream alive. And as we've touched upon many times, if you have more experiences in more different categories, the stronger a driver you'll be overall. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed indeed. She's got some interesting racing series to a name. And again, it gives you the adaptability. And I think looking back over potentially older series of F1, you begin to realize how important adaptability is when it comes to coping with races that start panning out differently to how you'd initially anticipated. You look, and they say that adaptability is one of the great marks of a racing driver. And you look at Alonso and Hamilton, their ability to adapt to a car that changes over time. And I think that in the long run, this is going to benefit Sophia a hell of a lot if she starts making progress up through the tiers, which I don't have my doubts she'll be able to do, especially because she's also got Alpine backing now as well. She's an Alpine junior driver. And as odd as their junior progression has been at times, obviously looking at the recent Piastri fiasco, they've done it. They've gotten their Alpine Junior into a Formula One race seat and arguably into one better than they could have possibly offered them themselves. So it's not to be sniffed at. It depends on quite how well McLaren performed this year as to how badly that statement ages. But equally, you've got to look at their ability to scout out talent. They've got Jack Doohan on the cards at the moment as their reserve driver, and he is by no means a bad driver, especially in F2. We saw him really dominating the second half of the season. So if they've got this sort of ability, a team that's scouting and crucially what looks like supporting talent coming through, this is a good time to be Sophia Flush, certainly. And obviously at their car launch, they announced there was it six female talent karting talents. They've announced their backing as well, which is again great stuff and genuinely proactive looking things. So now is a good time to be a junior Alpine driver, and certainly a good time to be a young woman looking to get into motorsports with the sort of opportunities Alpine are throwing out there. So it's all good news coming out of PHM Racing, even if PHM
Racing... And as well, we've got drivers in F2 and arguably in F1, definitely in recent years, in the latter, where there's no reason that they should have been there at all in the first place. And we've had the same discussion for Formula 2 this year already on this podcast. So if they can get further up the ranks, then surely it's only a matter of time before Sophia should move up there a little bit. So especially in PHM, if you look at the drivers that they've got for this year in Formula 2, if that's the level that she's got to beat, then that's all I'm going to say on that one. But as for the other two drivers, Fraser, is there either one of them that you're particularly more excited for, or are these two completely brand new names to you?
They're not brand new. I don't know either of them overly well, if I'm honest with you. And I'm sure they've got pedigree, don't they? So I'm sure they'll go on to have good seasons. Out of the three of them, I do think Sophia Flores will be the one that comes out on top. Let's wait and see. Formula 3 is a funny one, isn't it? Sometimes you get a talent that maybe hasn't done so well in single seaters up to that point, and all of a sudden they, you know, could become a great driver in Formula 3. So let's wait and see how they get on.
Raymer, meanwhile, we've got another three drivers there, so I shall go through them accordingly. We've got Paul Aron, who is third in Formula Regional last year with 6 wins to his name. We've then got one of the more better-known names on the grid. We've got Dino Beganovic, who I've butchered his name, so I apologise immediately for that. That's going to be a lot of happening today, I think. He's Swede, who made a single-seater debut with the Italian squad back in 2020, finishing third in Italian Formula 4. Then moved up to Freca the following year and took a podium during that first campaign before returning for a second outing last season. Dominated the start of the campaign and claimed 4 victories on his way to being crowned champion back at Mugello. Then we've got the first name from last year, which is Zach O'Sullivan, who finished 11th overall with 2 podiums and a best finish of 2nd place in Silverstone, which was surprising because I remember watching him last year, Fraser, and thinking, how did he not get a win? How was 2nd in Silverstone the best thing got there? Because he seemed to be just up there an awful lot, but just didn't translate to results, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, this is the most exciting lineup by far, isn't it? Obviously, it's Prema. They only not won the title once in all of their time in Formula 3, and that was last season. They'll be back very hungry, and yeah, 3 top quality drivers. I mean, Zach O'Sullivan, probably my favourite for the championship, returning to the category, did a good job with Carlin last year, and I think he'll be, he'll be straight in. Obviously, Williams backed driver as well, and he'll be straight in, you know, from the get-go. He'll be very, very strong. I think Beganovic is a really interesting one. I think he obviously has pedigree as well, moving through. Italian F4 was a really difficult series. So finishing 3rd in there is a real achievement. And obviously Freca is a really strong lineup. Paul Aron, I think, yeah, again, there's no reason why he can't fight for the title. I know it's his rookie season, the same with Boganovic, but I think they'll be both be in there. They'll be there or thereabouts, you know, fighting for the title. But for me, Zach O'Sullivan, with that year's experience, I think he's the man to beat this year.
O'Sullivan coming back in, this will be good for him. Again, I think there's a balance between rushing through your junior career in the way that we've seen some drivers literally fly through you. Again, your likes of your Piastris, where they sort of dominate pretty much every season, come through, pop out the top, and then you're going, now what? And then equally, those drivers that take a bit longer going through the seasons but come out a bit more rounded in some cases, they're more fully formed, they've got different styles of racecraft, they have a very more personal touch on the circuit, which often makes them a harder driver to compete against. So I don't think there's any shame in Zach O'Sullivan spending this sort of second season in Formula 3, and especially with Prema, with the backing he's got, that's no bad thing at all. So it'll be interesting to see if he is able to progress his racecraft from here onwards. Paul Aaron's going to be an interesting one, coming straight from Formula Regional. It's a big jump, but again, if he's been able to sort of do the testing previous to this and has shown that he's got the speed and the skill to do it, there's no reason to not keep an eye on him, at least, especially again with the backing of Prema behind him. It's a good team when it comes to nurturing and building up young talent. And if there's one they've found that's making those sort of big jumps, if they can sort of build a fire in him and keep him going, he could be a big sort of troublemaker around the mid part of the field here, especially if we've got some drivers that aren't so quick off the line, as it were, with regards to the season as a whole. And Boganovic, is it Boganovic or Boganovic? Is my first question. That was my first question. The second one again is, he is a hot shoe. He is going to be one to keep an eye on. And again, he's going to be a name that you'll see in Formula One in the next 3 to 4 years for certain. He'll be associated with bigger teams as the time goes by, without a shadow of a doubt. So yeah, Prema is the team to keep an eye on, I think. And they have arguably the strongest lineup of the lot. As much as I love some of the other drivers up and down the grid, because they're a bit sort of charismatic, or they're unique, or they've got an interesting story behind them, Prema's the one that's going to be leading this season for certain.
It's interesting you mentioned the jump up from Formula Regional as well, because Oliver Goethe did that last year with his rookie season, and he only finished 19th overall, having competed in just 4 rounds. But I don't know if that's just down to lack of time in the car, and it'd be interesting to see how he does now that he's got a full season with Trident, which is the next team we're going to go through. So it's definitely a big challenge, and the 4 rounds, I'm not 100% sure what the circumstances behind that were exactly, but again, it just shows that you do need a lot of things to go in your favour to get that full season there. And even if it is, 4 rounds is still plenty of time to prove yourself, depending on who you are. I mean, we've got Sebastian Montoya later on. He did a great job in Zandvoort and is back in F3 again this year. So very interesting to see where those dynamics come into play there. Other two drivers that will be driving for Trident, though, we've got Gabriel Bortoleto, which, just bear with me, people, we'll get through it. 6th in Formula Regional last year with 2 wins. And we've got Leonardo Frenoli, who's an 18-year-old who joined F3 off the back of a successful Frecce campaign with the Italian team, where he scored 15 points finishes in 20 of the out of the 20 races, finished 8th in the Drivers' Championship overall, and took honours as Rookie of the Year. So another potentially interesting candidate there.
Yeah, I think for me, Ollie Goethe is the one there where I'm most excited to see him return. And as you say, I don't think 19th in the championship, I don't think that was reflective of his performances in Formula 3 last year. He had 4 rounds, and actually I think his performances were actually very strong, and he jumped in the car and did quite a decent job. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him, obviously with a pre-season under his belt, seeing how he can get on this year and again in a competitive car as well. I don't remember he had that bad crash with Zane Maloney in Spa last year, which kind of been easy as well.
It's also worth noting as well with Goethe that despite the 4 rounds and one of those being Spa where he had the crash, obviously you have 30 drivers in Formula 3, but there's way more than 30 competing over the course of a season. So finishing 19th as well, it doesn't tell the full story at the same time, because it's still weirdly impressive.
Yeah, exactly. In such a competitive category, do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think he's the one this year out of all of the Trident drivers. By the way, Trident have got consistency coming out of their ears there, haven't they? But I think Ollie Goethe is the one that could really put a title challenge together. We'll see how he gets on. But with Trident, it's a proven team in Formula 3 compared to Formula 2, where they're perhaps not as competitive. It's a really competitive team in Formula 3. I think all three of those drivers have got a platform there to really push on this season. So, yeah, let's wait and see.
You're saying about the idea that in Formula 3 you're competing against this sort of very huge grid, essentially, of at some points almost 40 drivers competing in the season at different points. And so if you're coming home in the top half of that, that's pretty good indeed, especially when you consider that you've got drivers in here that will have done F3 for a season or two prior to that and other rookies. If you're coming in and only competing in a very for select amount of rounds and still coming out in the top half of that cutting, that's not a bad performance at all. So Oliver Goethe is likely going to be putting up a big challenge if he's got a full season this year. And again, he's got the, was he sort of proved last year, this ability to be dropped into a car and told go fast, and he does it. So without too many problems, he could be one that's putting in some big point scores over the weekends to come. So definitely interesting there. And anyone that's coming through, not necessarily from Formula Regional, but coming through from things like Frecca or the Italian F3 series. I know we've had another driver that's just come through from Italian Formula 4. Yeah, Dino Baganovic in the previous team. If you're coming through from, again, those, they are hugely competitive junior rounds. If you're getting through from those with decent positions, you've got not necessarily the technical know-how or the sort of raw pace, but your racecraft, your ability to cut through a very busy, very chaotic field is going to be something that plays hugely into your hands for F3 for certain. It's basically like sort of going amateur karting and being able to cut through a field where everything is going wrong constantly because you're surrounded by 8-year-olds. If you can do that and keep a cool head and keep your car in one piece, that's a useful skill, especially through the feeder series.
Doesn't mean they'll give you an F3 seat, Jesse, so stop going on about
Wasn't asking for an F3 seat, and I don't think I'd fit into one because I'm 6 foot tall, and they all seem to be children that are doing this. Like, they're so
it.
small. Why are they so diminutive? Or at least they are in my mind because it's F3. You assume that they're going to be tiny. I don't know.
ART, meanwhile, moving swiftly on, have got Kalyan Frederick, who finished 17th overall last year with the best placed of 5th in Silverstone. They've also got Grégoire Saucy, who was 15th in 2022 with the best finish of 3rd in Bahrain. Nikola Tsolov, let's go with that, a Bulgarian rookie who graduated single seaters in 2022, dominating the Spanish F4 Championship, where he took 13 victories on his way to the title, which, when you've got two experienced drivers up against you, I suppose that's not a bad stat to have for yourself as a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, you'd rather have the wins under your belt than not, right? So, I mean, that's a really impressive record. I think ART have the second strongest lineup, after Prema. I think it's a strong lineup. I think Grégoire Saucy, he didn't show what his true talent last season. I think he's a really talented driver, winner of Formula Regional European Championship back in 2021. And yeah, he started the season well, didn't he? A podium in Bahrain, and just didn't really get the momentum going. And it's really difficult when you don't have that momentum on your side, particularly with Victor Martins going on to win the championship as your teammate. But this year it's a new year, it's a fresh start. ART have kept him, they obviously trust him. And fastest in two of the three days of testing, wasn't he? He was P1 on the road, so yeah, not a bad start to the season. And I'm sure he'll be hoping for well, that he can convert that into victory in Bahrain in a couple of weeks' time.
Of the podcast, Jacob Phillips was complaining last year that he was not doing quite as well as we would have hoped coming out of Formula Regional. So I
Yeah.
believe the tough love process has worked once again there.
I don't particularly have too much else to add to ART. I mean, it's like we said, a strong lineup. You've got two returning drivers, then Nikola Tsolov coming through with what looks like a really sort of prominent Spanish F4 campaign behind him. And again, a driver that's got a proven ability to fight it out on a busy circuit. And again, he's going to have done around, I'm guessing Spanish F4 is going to have had a couple of other circuits on from the Spanish sort of world. But obviously, he's going to know Barcelona, which features on the F3 calendar. So it's going to be interesting to see how drivers perform at circuits they know, especially if they're coming from regional series. When they get to their regional circuits they previously know, that could be when we see some stellar performances. But equally, the converse applies when you see them at circuits they don't know and how quickly they can pick it up. And again, the idea of adaptability and your ability to accumulate information and take on board what your team is telling you is going to be a very quick decider of men amongst the boys, as it were.
That's why we love Formula 3, because those kind of things can really switch up a season and take some crucial points away from those who are actually fighting for the championship. MP Motorsport, in the meantime, Franco Colapinto back again, 9th in 2022 with 2 wins in Imola on Monza, plus 3 podiums to his name. He'll be joined by Mary Boyer, who will make a step up from Formula Regional European Championship after two seasons there. He scored his maiden podium in Valencia last year before going on to finish 10th in the standings. He is also joined by Johnny Edgar, who finished 12th last year with a best finish of 4th, which he managed twice in Spa and Zandvoort. Interestingly, back-to-back rounds there as part of the triple header. So I'm thinking this is a pretty strong lineup as well, actually, Fraser. You were saying about top two earlier. Maybe I'd say this may be a contender for the second strongest team there as well, just because Johnny Edgar and Frank Colapinto finished higher than the two other experienced drivers in, what was it, Trident or ART? I've already got confused so quickly. That didn't take very long at all.
ART.
ART.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there, isn't it? I mean, Colapinto, he was the surprise of last season, wasn't he? Did so well for VAR. And I think it's a good move for him going to MP. Johnny Edgar as well. I do feel for Johnny Edgar, obviously. He didn't get a fair crack at it last season. And I think, you know, obviously things didn't quite work out at Trident. I think they're two drivers that obviously have heaps of talent. And I think MP have got themselves two really strong drivers there, as you say. Both finished higher in the championship than the two returning ART boys. I think, maybe Boyer is the one that maybe lets the trio down, because that's very harsh to say. I don't mean that. but in terms of, in terms of experience and pedigree, I think maybe he doesn't bring some of the other drivers in the field bring. I'm interested to see whether Colapinto can put together a championship winning or contending season. Yeah, Colapinto in particular, I think. You know, we saw Kyle Collette obviously have a really good season for MP last year. And I think, Colapinto could be there or thereabouts for a championship as well, couldn't he? I definitely think he'll be competing for podiums and maybe some wins regularly, so.
I think definitely the first driver on this list for us to be seriously considering for that, considering what we know as well, because again, Formula 3, very unpredictable. We could be completely wrong and he has an absolutely terrible season, but on paper, it seems like the first serious contender there.
Mm. Especially when you bear in mind how many of last year's top F3 crop moved up to F2, it does open up that sort of space. You've got that vacuum for the next round of top drivers to be sucked up into, and Colapinto is undoubtedly a name that's easily bandied about in that space. I mean, obviously, on the subject of Johnny Edgar, he had a rough 2022. Obviously, he had sort of a flare-up of Crohn's disease coming through. But again, he pulled off, despite the odds and with this sort of incredible resilience, a very good performance. And coming home 12th, like we've already said, in the championship that's got nearly 40 drivers in it, essentially, on the score sheets, that's a very strong-looking performance. Even if you have 30, that's still a top-half finish, which is what you're looking for to really start stamping your name down on things. One interesting thing before we move on from Johnny Edgar is his cousin, Jessica Edgar, is now in the F1 Academy as well. So she'll be competing in the series below him. So we've got motorsport in the family.
In motorsport, family relations, that never happens.
No, not at all. Moving on to high-tech, where there's Sebastian Montoya.
Yes, P21 last year, having competed in just two races at Zandvoort, where he finished P8 twice. Pretty impressive. And like we were saying just now, P21 after only two races and getting, 4 points then around that kind of thing, and being able to beat that many other drivers, who a good few of which will have at least more than two races to prove themselves. That's a bit of a statement, I think, Fraser.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a real statement, as you say. So, yeah, I like the high-tech lineup, you know. I think, Sebastian Montoya brings a lot of outright talent, shall we say, is stepping in finishing or having a good round in Zandvoort was definitely positive. Luke Browning, I mean, the GB3 champion, you can't look beyond that, can you? That's a competitive series, and he went and won it. And Gabriel Mini as well. I mean, I think it's a really, really strong looking lineup for high tech this year as well, isn't it? And they're a growing team. I think they'll be even more competitive this year than they were over the last couple of years. So, yeah, it's an exciting one.
Yeah, and Mini as well, taking the fastest time on opening day at Jerez in post-season test. So, very interesting. I keep coming back to what you were saying earlier about strong lineups, and then the further down with the list we get, I think, well, that's a pretty competitive lineup as well, Fraser. I wouldn't be calling them out just yet either.
No, exactly. It's going to be really... We know how competitive Formula 3 was last year, right? I mean, there was 7-8 drivers who you didn't discount from winning the title with about two rounds to go. So if it is going to be... Yeah, we know what Formula 3 is like. So it'll be the same again this year. And there's 7, 8, 9 drivers who you look at them and you think, wow, yeah, they could win the title this year. They could win the title this year. This team has got a strong lineup. So yeah, as ever, Formula 3 always delivers, doesn't it? So it's going to be really interesting to watch this season.
Another championship contender there, Jesse. Kyle Collette for VAR, 8th last year with 2 wins in Hungary and Zandvoort, plus another 3 podiums. We definitely got to include him in championship contention, surely.
Oh, he's without a shadow of a doubt, he's got to be up there. And certainly the top 5 drivers that we're lining up for this year's F3 season, certainly possibly even pushing into that top 3 category. I'd need to probably like rank a lot of them to figure it out for certain. But off the top of my head, when you're thinking of names that could win the 2023 F3 season, Kyle Collette is a name that jumps out of you, and he's a name that still jumps out at me from last year's season, because there were some absolutely fantastic performances. And I'm right in saying the performance in Hungary was that crazy one where it was the change from wet to dry, or was that just for F2?
Yes.
No, yeah, it was F3, yeah. And it was that slightly nuts race, and he was able to capitalize on it, get the sort of compound change sorted, and get back out there and make progress through a completely jumbled field. And yeah, to come out looking like a hero in complicated conditions that early on in your career is a good sign, and certainly a good thing to have against your racing record. Rafael Villagomez, again, 25th with the best and only points finish of 9th last year at Imola. Second year with the team, hopefully he'll get his legs under the table and be a bit more confident out on circuit. We'll start to see some interesting performances. And then Tommy Smith, New Zealand Formula 1600 Championship, and then obviously Toyota Racing Series F3 Asian Championships. It's a different background to come into all of a sudden. It's so far removed from what we're used to seeing. They're coming from the European circuits. So he could prove to be an interesting outsider, a dark horse to some extent, just to see how well he performs. I mean, obviously he's had a few round appearances at GB3 Championships, but yeah, it's different, and Tommy Smith could certainly be one to keep an eye on, not necessarily for high ranking performances, but just to see where this next pool of talent could be coming from, if that's the quality these other racing series are able to produce.
That's with big... VAR being a fresh team as well, that they've got their one staple driver there, Frazier, but with the other two, they're kind of taking a little bit of a risk, but they can afford to at the same time because they're young and they're getting their feet under the table a bit as well, like Jesse was saying, and can just kind of throw a few more things at the wall and see what sticks.
Listen, that's a big jump for Tommy Smith. That's a big, big jump. So we'll see how he gets on. And as you say, if he does do well, then great. You know, looking forward to it. But Kyle Collette, to be honest, I'm surprised Kyle Collette isn't in a more competitive car. I didn't know whether he'd go to a Prema or an ART. He was even linked with a potential F2 seat at one point as well, wasn't he? So I'm surprised. That's no disrespect to VAR, and they've got himself a really competitive driver there. I was surprised when I saw him confirm at VAR. So,
talking of surprises, Roden Carlin rebranded for this year. They've got Hunter Yaney, who we were talking about championship position being quite an interesting topic of conversation. 33rd overall last year, with the best finish of P16 twice at Imola and Silverstone. And I've written in the notes here, don't drive into your teammates in Barcelona this time, because that was just... It's just what you don't do for someone who wants to make a name for himself, and especially with a lot of American backing behind him, possibly why Carlin have snapped him up there. It's an interesting choice.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Ollie Gray is the standout driver here. Hunter Yaney, yeah, again, you know, 33rd overall last year.
To be fair, the fact that you skipped straight over to Ollie Gray tells me everything I need to know, to be honest.
Exactly that. Yeah, I can't lie. I'm not overly excited by Hunter Yaney. I'm not overly excited by Ido Cohen either. I think Ollie Gray is the one for me that stands out in the Carlin lineup. I think he's a great prospect. He's only 17 years old. Obviously, British Formula 2. Formula 4 last year. I saw him at Silverstone at British Formula 4 last year, and looked really, really strong. So I'm excited to see him and what he can do in Carlin, an uncompetitive Carlin, it must be said, this year. But yeah, hopefully Stephanie Carlin can get the best out of him. So
I think
Ido Cohen with a got best finish of 9th, which came in the Spielberg feature race, which just seems a bit of an anomaly of a very long season there, especially when you're finishing 24th overall.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag from Carlin, obviously, you've Ollie Gray coming in with some sort of fresh blood to the series, and you've got Hunter Yaney, 33rd last year. I've checked just now. There were 40 drivers in the 2021 F3 Championship. So when you're making it into the top 20, you're doing pretty good there. So coming,
sure, when you're 21st, if you're Sebastian Montoya off two races.
Yes. Yeah, that's not too shabby at all. Two races to get that high up the ranking is doing very nicely indeed. But then when you're looking at, yeah, your likes of your Hunter Yaney, Ido Koen coming home 33rd and 24th respectively, you're wanting more from these drivers. And maybe the sort of demanding atmosphere that Carlin might be able to produce will be enough to sort of push them on to develop better. The school of hard knocks, the school of sort of really being driven through things. But
it's
Ollie Gray,
to note with those two drivers as well, that they both left the teams that they were driving for last year and went to a new team there. So, and those teams in particular, they've both taken on, at least in Gender's case, at least one rookie driver. So it just shows that they're willing to take that gamble. It's like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that 2 years in a row.
But yeah, if you're Ollie Gray, you're coming into this looking at your teammates and going, these are two people that it's relatively easy for him to go toe-to-toe against and possibly even come out on top of. And if you've got that in your racing career coming into a new season as a rookie and you're able to go toe-to-toe with your teammates that have a year's experience on you, that's going to do marvel for his sort of confidence and his ability out on track. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see Ollie Gray outranking Yaney and Koen by the end of 2023. That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
As long as neither of them drive into him.
It's yet to be seen.
Campos, meanwhile, we've got another returning face, Christian Mansell, P38 overall, having competed in just four races with the best finish of P22 in Hungary. We could say again all the stuff we've just said about a championship, but I think we all know it by now. Hugh Barter is going to be continuing with the Campos team after racing with them in Spanish F4 last year, where he claimed 6 wins and 7 further podiums. He also won 10 races in the French Formula Academy and ended both campaigns second in the standings. They'll be joined by Pepe Marti, who graduated from karting with a Spanish Junior Championship to his name, finished 2021 Spanish F4 season third in the driver's standings with 2 wins and 9 podiums, and then stayed with the Spanish team for his move to F3, where he finished the championship in 25th. Mixed bag, but there's a lot of potential there, I think, Fraser.
Yeah, Hugh Barter is the one that stands out for me there. We watched him in Spanish and French F4 last year. Spoke to him actually on the F2 show for Inside F2 last year. And I think he has a lot of potential. He could have a quietly good season for Campos. And when I say a quietly good season, I think, you know, scoring regular points in the Campos in Formula 3 is a very good season. And I think that could be something that he'd be aiming for. I don't really feel like Pepe Marti really got a... He didn't get going last year. And I think returning to the same team, a bit of consistency, I think, yeah, it could be a good move for him to get going. And I think Hugh Barter having Pepe Marti there, who was there in the team last year, I think that is a good benchmark for Hugh Barter to go up against. Two strong drivers there. Christian Mansell, again, didn't really see much of him last year. I'm not sure. We'll wait and see on that one. But Jesse, is Christian Mansell, is he related to Nigel Mansell? Is he? Or...
He is not, no. It's an easy mistake to make, but he is not. I feel like that's a mistake I've probably made before.
In the same way that Marino Sato is definitely related to Kuma, right, Fraser?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, all of these young drivers that are coming through, you know, it's, unbelievable, right?
Everyone's got a family link by surname. Yeah, I make sugar famously, Billington Sugar. It's the same people, obviously.
We are only joking. For listeners that think, oh my God, this guy goes nothing. We are joking. We know Christian Mansell isn't related to Nigel Mansell. So, all jokes aside, it is his grandson, right?
Oh, come on, Fraser. You know he's related to Kuma Sato as well.
That is true as well. Exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure on Christian Mansell. We'll wait and see. But I think Hugh Barter, Pepe Marti, yeah, not a bad lineup. And I think, it'll be interesting to see how Hugh Barter in particular gets on.
Potentially the ballsiest lineup on the grid, though, we save the best for last here, is Genza Motorsport, who've taken not one, not two, but three rookies onto the team for Formula 3 this year. We've got Alejandro Garcia, who's a Mexican, who raced in Euro Formula Open Championship, where he entered the season seventh in the standings. Then we've got Nikita Bezrin, who was 2021 German and Italian F4 rookie champion. And then finally, we've got Taylor Bernard, who, British racer, makes a step up off the back of finishing runner-up in the German ADAC Formula 4 Championship with 5 wins and a further 5 podiums to his name. As I said, just ballsy, and I feel like Genza, they've never been too near the top of things, really, so I guess it's a case of why the heck not.
It's an exciting lineup for Genza, isn't it? Really exciting lineup. I mean, I'm looking at two of those drivers, Taylor Barnard and Nikita Bezrin, and I'm thinking, you know what? They could be really good quality signings for Genza. Both got championship wins, you know, under their belt, or at least competing for championships regularly. Wins, podiums to their names. They're two very experienced drivers. And yeah, Alejandro Garcia, I mean, yeah, why not take a punt? Why not take a go? And I think that's probably, if you look at some of the lineups we've just spoken about, you know, you're looking at Carl and you're looking at Campos, I'd say Genza have got a better lineup there than both of those teams. So yeah, fair play to them. They're giving it a real go. Taylor Barnard in particular, I'm excited to see. British bias, absolutely. But I'm excited to see how he gets on. So yeah, good for Genza. I'm looking forward to seeing their drivers race this year.
There's potential as well, Jesse, that next year in particular, if Genza are being this ballsy now, that even though I don't think they've got a team in F1 Academy this year, they could take up one of the drivers there for Formula 3 because they'd just be more willing to take a risk on that, whereas some of the teams that do have a presence, Prema, Campos, etc., who knows how likely they're going to be to give those drivers the step up from F1 Academy. So maybe Genza would be a secret kind of backdoor way in for any of the drivers there.
I mean, it might well be. They've sort of shown, at least this year, they're prepared to take risks. But I mean, if you're Campos and you've got Christian Mansell not performing this season, but you've got someone in F1 Academy who does quite nicely this season, say an Abbey Pulling, all of a sudden you've got a sort of brilliant opportunity to bring in some very hot talent and sort of give them a proper chance in F3. But what other teams have we got linked to F1 Academy?
Campos, Prema, ART, Carlin, and
High-tech.
One other that... High-tech, that's the one.
High-tech, yeah. So again, you've got
kind of like your Hunter Yanis there as well, which...
Yeah, you've again, got a lot of drivers that... If they don't perform in their second season, which I feel is possibly a bit harsh for F3, but if you're not performing or if you've been given every possible chance...
If you're not going to perform in F3, you're not going to be able to perform in
F2,
are you?
So. Yeah. And if you've been given 2 years of every possible chance and you're failing to do so, but you've got someone linked to that team who's a hot shoe in F1 Academy, the rank below, it's a pretty good chance that you're going to be sort of punted out for the likes of... your Abbey Pullings, I can't remember who else we've got lined up for F1 Academy this season. I haven't had a proper look at their full grid yet because it hasn't been completed and we don't know where they're racing.
We haven't got all of them yet, but again, if you're Prema and you've got a strong team this year, but you're likely going to promote at least one of them up to F2 next year and you've got Bianca Bustamante with them, then that seems natural for someone there. You've got a couple of the drivers whose names I'm absolutely forgetting now, but we will go through those when we do an F1 Academy episode. But again, you've got drivers. You're not going to be short of drivers, I don't think, that will be more than worthy to take a punt on, when, especially if you've got PHM taking a punt on getting Flourish back and you've got them taking a punt in F2 with those two drivers there, it shows that there is scope for risk-taking. And why would they not? If you can do it for this, why would you not do it for them?
It opens that question up of the grounds of if you get these spaces open up either through lack of performance or through stellar performance that sees your drivers promoted, you're opening up these gaps. And yeah, the chances and opportunities are likely going to present themselves. I think we're at a very interesting turning point where 2023 is going to be not necessarily the spark that ignites it, but it's going to prove to be the kindling. And we need those drivers to be the sparks to really show it off, especially the drivers in F1 Academy, to be that spark that sort of hits the touch paper and goes, boom, right, look, we've proven we can do this. We've had drivers in F2 last year with Benfima, we've got Sofia Flourish this year. We've got proof that you can get into those seasons and do well. And the more of them that we get moving through, the more likely they are to sort of obtain that sponsorship that's needed to really cement the financial ability to get them into it. Because that seems to be the only thing that's holding female drivers getting into motorsport back at this point in time, is the fact that no one wants to sponsor them. And I don't get why you wouldn't do that, because even on a completely cynical marketing level, everyone's going to be watching the one woman on the field because they're going to go, I wonder how she does. And if you want eyes on your company branding, you slap it on the one car, you know, everyone's going to be watching. You either go for
the joke in the F1 livery episode the other day that we still had no idea what the hell Ollin was and we had to Google it. So, you know, if we're going to have someone like Sophia Flirsch, for example, like, I'll take more interest in it just because you're there.
Mm. Like, you sort of spend so much time looking at them because there's the natural interest because you're the only one who's a female on the grid. It's naturally going to have a sort of, you stand out because naturally of who you are, unfortunately, because you are the only person in this circumstance. But and from, again, that cynical marketing perspective, everyone's looking. Everyone's got eyes on that car for 14 sort of, we have at least 14 hours over the course of a year. That's a lot of advertising that you're never really going to be able to buy anywhere else. And everyone's going, I wonder what insert brand here is really doing. Googles it. Oh, yes, I need some petrol refining or such and such.
Before we finish up, though, Fraser, I'm going to ask you some mean questions. And Jesse, you're not going to be safe from this either. So 30 drivers. I would like a winner from you, Fraser.
Yeah, really tough question. I think I said it earlier on. By the way, I think it's going to be the last chance to win the title, by the way, for some of these drivers until 2025. Because, I mean, Kimi Antonelli is going to come into Formula 3 with Prema in 2024 and win it hands down. So I think this is the last opportunity for a couple of years for anyone to win Formula 3. I am going to say it's going to be one. Yeah, he looks unbelievable, doesn't he? I think it'll be a Prema driver, and I do think it'll be Zach O'Sullivan who wins the title this year.
We'll counter your Kimi thing just briefly as well by saying Ugo is being very, very quick as well. So that, who knows?
That is true as well. That, I mean, a title battle between those two would be unbelievable, wouldn't it? So it'd be good to see that. And can I say as well, by the way, that 30 cars around Monaco this year is going to be outrageous. Yeah. Outrageous.
We're not getting out of that one intact, are we?
No, definitely not.
I have hope in Kyle Collet. I won't lie. There's this sort of strange outsider energy that he could just whip through, have a really strong opener to his season, and then just sort of continue on with some consistency. Similar to how we saw with Filippo Drogovic in F2 in season gone, where it just has this absolute blinder of a start and then just keeps it with the consistency. I wouldn't be surprised if Kyle Collet can pull something like that out the bag. That way he's not having to chase things and be on the back foot, and I think that will set him up for the best season possible. So yeah, he's my, I wouldn't say money bet, but he's the one I have the strongest feeling about.
You'll want to bet money on him in a second because, as always, I have to do the ballsy prediction, which I have no trouble with because I would absolutely love it if this happened. So I will put, I'll put a couple of quid down just for the sake of it, because if I'm right, woohoo, and I will say, let's have a fairy tale year and Sophia Flirsch can win the title.
I wouldn't be annoyed if she did. That's the thing. I wouldn't be mad. I would be damned impressed, and I think it would be a really good sort of case study to go, see, W Series, this is what you should have done. This is what you could have achieved.
So, again, Fraser, 30 drivers, you've got one winner there. Who do you think is going to be 40th out of the 30 when by the time we get around to it?
40th out of the 30. This is a brutal question. Feel bad for answering this. Let me have a look down the list. I'm going to say one of the... let me go. Tommy Smith.
Not just because he's being challenged for him.
Yeah. Roberto Faria maybe as well. I'm not sure. There's a few drivers down there. PHM is their first season. Maybe Roberto Faria, maybe.
That'd be quite a contrast if I'm right about who wins that season. And you've got on the other end of it, you've got one of the drivers with the same team.
Yeah, I mean, could happen.
Formula 3, to be fair.
I was going to say Felipe Drugovic to Clement Nomalak was a really big disparity, wouldn't it? So, yeah, listen, I don't like predicting those kind of things. It's feels a bit mean, doesn't it? But maybe one of those guys, just purely on their experience and rookies coming into the sport, which is absolutely a bit brutal, that, isn't it? Jesse, I'm interested to know what you say there.
Well, I don't know, I've just got the testing data up from day 3 of F3, and Smith and Farrier are the bottom two in the rankings there. with the slowest times 2.15 and 2.32 seconds off the pace. But equally, ooh, backing up Timo's bold prediction of a flush win, she'll definitely beat her teammates, as, I mean, she's outranked them consistently on all the days of testing. I'm torn between Cohen and Wisniewski. I think that's where my doubts lie in the season. Looking at their times at the moment, their ability to extract what they can from their car, especially compared to where their teammates are putting those cars, is where my doubts lay. So yeah, I'm going to go, unfortunately for them, fingers crossed they're not listening, otherwise this is going to sound horrible, but yeah, Pitor Wisniewski or possibly a Ido Cohen.
I'm going to go and cheat a little bit here and say that due to just F3 and F2 being as mad as they are, we will see Roy Nissany get demoted to F3 and he will therefore finish at the bottom of the pack.
Can he be demoted to F3?
Sure he can.
I mean, obviously Roberto Meri got demoted to F2 last season.
Exactly. So, and he did all right there, so he'll just do the opposite of that.
Well, I want to ask the question that we asked when we did our F2 grid run through. What drivers, I think I've preempted your thought there, of which drivers do we think are missing from the F3 grid? And I think I've already mentioned my one, which is definitely Abby Pulling, who in reality should be on this grid somewhere.
I agree. I'm going to give Fraser a couple of minutes there to think there, because I'm just...
I've got mine already, Timo, so I'm happy to jump in if you want to. I think Antonelli was good enough to step up this season, to be honest with you. I do think he was good. That's a big jump, but I do think he has the talent and the raw speed to have jumped up and had a season, got a season under his belt of, I think he would have been there or thereabouts competing for the title, depending on what team he was going to be driving with. But assuming it was a semi-decent team, I think he would have been there or thereabouts. And then next season, it would have been a Prema drive and he would have won the title. But I mean, either way, I still think he's going to be in a Prema next season, because I know how much Mercedes back him and, Mercedes always end up with their drivers in the best teams, right? You look at Frederik Vesti moving up to Prema in Formula 2 this year. I mean, the Mercedes always put their drivers in the best teams. And I think next season he'll jump into a Prema and I think he'll win the title hands down. I don't think it'll even be a contest next season. So,
such certainty. I love it. I'll go a little bit left field again and say that, again, based on some of the driver choices that we've seen on this grid already, with experienced, he says in quotation marks, and rookies as well coming into it with such a variety of backgrounds, I would be very interested to see what someone like Hamed Al-Kobasi could do in F3. She's got a good bit of experience in various regional championships. Obviously, didn't end quite so well for her in the UAE just now, broken arm, but she seems in good spirits, and hopefully she gets back on her feet and everything very soon. But that would be very interesting for me. I think she's very calm and steady and very mature for her age as well, which I don't think you get a lot, or as much as you should do with a lot of drivers around that age these days. And you can see how the pressure gets to a lot of them. And you see that with the fact that in a 30 driver championship, you have close to 40 over the course of a year. And sometimes that's financial, sure, but sometimes that's just because the pressure gets too much and the team decides it has to bring someone else in if they stand a chance of being competitive in the constructors. So I think she'd be a speedy little demon in the right car.
The way she drives is to an extent reminiscent of Kimi Raikkonen. It's that sort of Iceman, completely unflappable ability to just get round the track and do it with sort of a brutal efficiency, which is impressive. And again, I think with the right amount of driver development and the right amount of proper pushes and backing, could definitely be one to watch, and it would be interesting. I definitely think she would have needed two seasons in F3 just to make sure she gets up to speed of things, but yeah, a solid choice for certain.
We'll get her in for a guest spot in one or two races later in the year then. We'll start her off that way, ease her in.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you were saying, I think that wraps up everything for this episode quite nicely, F3 wise. Fraser, have you had a nice time and chatting everything Formula 3?
I've had a great time, guys. Thank you very much for having me. Really appreciate it. It's always good to talk about Formula 3. Really enjoyed that. And it's nice to be answering some questions rather than asking them for a change. So, yeah, absolutely. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Where can people find you in the meantime if they want to see a bit more of you?
People can find me over at Inside F2, where we do the podcast, the F2 show. We're on Instagram at Inside Formula 2, and we're also on Twitter at F2 Inside. Or people can also find me at underscore Fraser Ford 1, where all I do on social media is share F2 stuff from Inside F2. So you're not really gaining anything by following me, but you can follow me if you want to.
If they want that parasocial relationship with podcasters, they can achieve that nicely.
Exactly that.
Timo, where can the people find you?
Is it Fast, Nitrorex Podcast, Paddock Authority, Paddock Passion, Instagram, On the Curbs, just about gosh darn everywhere.
Like a terrible suit, you're all over the place.
There's a pattern forming with these with you, and I'm not liking it.
I'm gonna
Jesse, where can people find you?
You can find me all across Instagram and Twitter as at Jesse on Cars. You can also find me on YouTube, where I'm hopefully going to be rebooting my channel. I've got some F1 predictions to make this season and probably some content featuring a midget, but not that sort of stuff. And there's more stuff featuring me and my antics with classic cars in Classic Car Weekly, where you can find all the latest deals, auction reviews, and indeed classic car events across the season, including the big ones like Silverstone Festival with and Goodwood Revival. So if you want some old school F1 stuff, I'm trying to shoehorn as much of it as possible, or as much of my editor will let me get away with into there.
In the meantime, thank you all very much for listening to this episode. We'll be back soon with some F1 and feeder series good stuff. So until then, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.